puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Abandoned Manitoba time with Gordon Goldsberg. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Let's just get straight to it. What was the clue from last week?
Well, listeners may recall that last week we talked about the former buildings at the Kapyong Barracks that were demolished. And, you know, anytime we talk about demolition, it makes me sad because there is another approach that would have diverted literally mountains of rubble from taking up space in a landfill. So today we are talking about deconstruction.
Okay, what is deconstruction?
It's a method of disassembling a structure to recover the materials that it contains so they can be reused in some other structure or at least recycled into new materials. So as compared to using new materials for construction, reuse has lots of advantages. It consumes less energy and renewable resources. It generates less pollution, such as greenhouse gases. By diverting these materials from the landfills, we extend the life of those landfills, and it creates jobs and business opportunities. Fundamentally, it's an embrace of a more sustainable approach in the construction industry. So, for example, when the building on Portage Avenue that is occupied by Mountain Equipment Co-op was constructed, it used 97% of the parts from three buildings that had occupied the site before it. And yet, despite all these advantages, deconstruction is still anything but the norm.
I mean, it sounds like such a win-win solution. So why is it not the norm in the construction industry?
I think that to do a deconstruction effectively, it requires people in the industry who have extensive connections to other like-minded professionals. So, for example, bartering is a major part of this whole approach, and you need to know who you can barter with. But fundamentally, it takes a different worldview than the quick and dirty approach that seems to have predominated in this industry. Take, for example, the recent demolition of the Gordon House on Wellington Crescent, a beautiful old house made with superior materials that could have been reused. Instead, it was knocked down in a matter of hours and trucked away. And I think this was probably to thwart opposition to it being demolished from the community around it.
Do you have any experience with deconstruction?
Well, I'm definitely not any kind of expert at all, but I was involved with a project in which a two-story brick residence building at 57 Carlton Street here in Winnipeg was deconstructed back in 2004. The deconstruction was done to build a new visitor center attached to Dalnevirt Museum that was located right next door. And the two people who led that project were construction manager Jerry Humphreys and conservation architect Wins Bridgman. I learned a lot about deconstruction from those two knowledgeable men.
What was the history of the building that was deconstructed?
It was not especially old, you know, at least if you compare it to Dalnevirt Museum. You know, that building was built in 1895 as the home for Hugh John MacDonald, the son of Canadian Prime Minister John A. MacDonald. The house at 57 Carlton was built, well, we're not quite sure, either 1933 or 1934. And it seems to have consisted, at least in its later years, of two apartments, one on the main floor and another on the second. A rumor that I've heard was that one of those apartments was used for a corsetry business for a reason that I'll explain later.
Okay, if you say so. But how was it deconstructed, though?
Well, so listeners get a visual idea of what it entails. I've actually put up a gallery of photos that I took during the deconstruction of 57 Carlton on the MHS website. So if you go to www.mhs.mb.ca/deconstruction, you'll see a number of photos showing what was done. And I should make clear that it was not possible to reuse the entire building. Some parts, like much of the roofing and the interior buffalo board and plaster, could not be salvaged in any real way, so it had to be discarded, unfortunately. Metal parts were sorted out into various piles, and copper pipes, for example, were separated and sold for the metal recycling value. Copper is still very valuable. We had hoped that we might be able to recover the copper in the electrical wiring. Unfortunately, our manager advised that in order to recover that copper, you would have to burn it so as to get rid of the coating around the metal, and this would compromise air quality standards, so it just wasn't going to be cost-effective to recover the wiring.
Were the fixtures inside the house able to be reused?
Yeah, absolutely. The house had all kinds of decorative wooden millwork around doorways and windows. It was all carefully removed so, to avoid damaging it so it could be reused. Likewise, plumbing fixtures and the metal steam heat registers were recovered, and they were either sold or they were traded to other contractors who might need them. And the idea then is that even if you can't use them, someone else can. And that way we obtained funds or we obtained materials that we could use in our project. We salvaged over 1,000 square feet of solid oak flooring, you know, the really good quality stuff that you just can't buy these days. And it was removed from rooms in the house, and we've stored that for reuse in the visitor center. Basically, could become flooring again. Numerous large mirrors on the walls, now supposedly from the aforementioned Core Street business, I guess they needed them so that people could check themselves out in the proposed corsetry. They were packed away carefully, and they were later trimmed to the right size so they could be used in the washrooms of the visitor center. Solid wood doors were likewise packed away for use in offices. In the end, not everything that we had stored away could be reused, but at least then it could be either sold or traded, and therefore it had value for our project.
And what about the structure of the building itself? Could anything be salvaged there?
Absolutely. The wall studs and the floor joists in the building were all made from fir, a very hard wood that is superior to the softwood or metal that is often used for wall studs in modern construction. You know, many of the walls in the new visitor center were based on this fir lumber. You look at photos and you can see the older ones, they have a different color than the new studs. Finally, after all of the other parts were taken out, the exterior brick walls of the house consisted of two courses. There was an attractive red brick layer on the outside and then yellow sort of construction grade bricks on the inner layer, all of them in wonderful condition. The red bricks, they were reused for brick accents on the exterior of the new building. The yellow bricks were sold and traded. We took the walls down and then we employed workers to basically manually remove the mortar from the bricks so that they could be used again. And then after they had been cleaned off to minimize trucking costs, we actually just stacked those bricks on pallets in the parking lot by the facility. And so they could simply wait there until we needed them during the building phase of the project.
And what proportion of the old building was reused?
Oh, I'd like to have the statistic. Unfortunately, it's not a number that I have available. What I can say is that it was not zero, as it would have been if, like many other buildings, it was simply demolished and trucked to a landfill. If anyone, by the way, is interested in hearing more about demolition, deconstruction, and other subjects relating to Manitoba architecture, I heartily encourage listeners to check out a new podcast called Prairie Design Lab. It's hosted by the retired CBC host. And of course, you'll know of Terry McLeod. In the first episode of his podcast, Terry talks with architect Les Stetchison, who designed the public safety building. And of course, it was taken down last year. And he talks with Les about what else could have been done as opposed to just demolishing the public safety building.
And shout out to Terry. I listened to that episode as well. Such a good podcast. So if you miss Terry's voice, like many of us do, the podcast is called Prairie Design Lab. Gordon, thank you so much for this. It's nice to always have kind of a positive vibe to abandoned Manitoba. We don't always get that. What's up for next week?
Just over 2 weeks from now, nominations will be due for one of Canada's oldest literary awards that recognizes excellent books on Manitoba history. So next week, I'm going to talk about the Margaret McWilliams Awards, and we'll start with an answer to the question, who was Margaret McWilliams?
Great place to start, Gordon. Thank you.
We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.